This is the sound of football.
And on this week's Sound of Football podcast, we look back on a Premier League weekend full of draws and wonder whether Chelsea's 3-3 against Everton really was the sign of a crisis setting in. We also check out Arsenal's impressive comeback against Liverpool and size up the yawning chasm between Rafa's men and the league leaders. Plus, we pick out the best of the Europa League action for you to feast your eyes on this week. That's all on this week's Sound of Football. And it's a very warm welcome to show 19 of The Sound of Football. I'm Chris Oakley, and this week it's just myself and my esteemed colleague from Some People on the Pitch and the Onion Bag, Graham Sibley.
Hello.
Graham, welcome to the show. Hello there. No Terry this week. He's busy doing other things. You can see that the Sound of Football podcast is gradually working its way down his list of priorities, but we won't hold that against him for the time being. Just us two today. And, we're going to start off in part one by looking at two of the key games from the Premier League at the weekend. And, I think I'm right in saying that in the Premier League at the weekend, there was about 10 games, I think 7 of them were draws the last time I looked, and fairly high-scoring ones.
Yeah, there was.
As well. But I think I'll draw a veil over one of the matches that won the draws, is the 1-0 defeat for West Ham at Birmingham. But, I'm over it now. It's all right, fine.
And that was their home win of the weekend as well, that one.
Yeah, all right, Graham. Sorry, if you can just leave it now. Thanks. We're going to start off by looking at the match between Arsenal and Liverpool, which, of course, will be of particular relevance to yourself, Graham, being an Arsenal supporter, yeah, as I'm sure many people will now be aware. And it was a very impressive win for Arsenal on the day. Liverpool 1, Arsenal 2 was the final score. Liverpool did go ahead 1-0 thanks to Dirk Kuyt just before half-time, but a Johnson own goal and then what turned out to be a winning goal from Arshavin on 58 minutes gave Arsenal the win in the end, and various superlatives we can throw at that one. It was Arsenal's first win at Anfield since October 2003, and actually Arsenal were the first team to win at Anfield having been behind for the first time in 80 games, so quite an impressive win actually by all accounts, and one that I think you'll be personally very satisfied with, Graham. Did you see the game? Presumably you saw the game, and what did you think of it?
I did, yeah. Well, I thought it was the classic game of two halves. I mean, I watched the first half, like, basically the air was blue around me because it looked utterly hopeless, and it looked same old story of Arsenal being out-hounded and out-muscled of a game. Out-muscled. It was Liverpool were covering every blade of grass in the first half. It did sort of make you think, how long can they keep this up? But I've seen teams like that go up against Arsenal before and actually get away with the win and actually be able to finish the last half an hour when they should be knackered, to actually just be able to contain the game and see out the win. But this time round, I think a lot was said about Wenger's half-time talk and Cesc Fabregas' comments immediately after the game. But I think it was more down to the way that Liverpool came out the second half, because they did all of a sudden seem to be a hell of a lot more space around for Arsenal to pass the ball around, and especially for the goal 5 minutes in. I mean, yes, it was very unfortunate for Johnson. I mean, he took two deflections on his way into the box, but you know, it was a ball into the danger area, and you know, Walcott was there, so you know, Johnson had to do something, and he stuck a leg out, and you know, it slowly crept into the back of the net. Well, would it have been different? I don't think it would have been. I think Liverpool did come out the second half a completely different side. I don't know what had happened, but or whether or not
all they to
were, yeah, whether or not
I was they, say all to Arsenal's benefit, I guess.
Yeah, it was, and Arsenal came out with a bit more purpose, and obviously got that goal, which was quite fortunate, and then got a superb goal from Arshavin, who seems to like scoring Anfield very much. Thank you.
He got, of course, he got all four the last time they played when it was a 4-4 draw. So, yes, he's obviously got a liking for the place. And Theo Walcott has been sort of coming out in sort of praise of Arshavin, basically sort of saying, well, we don't really need Van Persie at the moment. I'm sure we'll do fine without him, and because we've got Arshavin. What are your views on that?
Well, I think Walcott doesn't want Wenger to go out in January and buy another striker.
The thing is, I think that he is, isn't he?
Yeah, well, yeah, I can't see it really, because if Wenger goes out looking for a striker, then, you know, anyone who is worth buying is going to have their price doubled. And you don't want to spend big money on someone who's just basically covered for someone else until they come back. Mm. Yeah, there was talk about Van Nistelrooy coming in, but I don't hold any store in that. I think, you know, he may be on his way out in January, but
Would you be happy if they did sign him?
Maybe on loan till the end of the season.
Just as a tester.
Yeah, I mean, he knows how to score in the Premier League. I mean, like, he's certainly, you know, I wouldn't have any problem being in the side, but, you know, it's more, I mean, you know, when you hear these things in the press, it seems more argle-bargle about, you know, agent talk rather than actual proper football talk. I don't know. I mean, like, I got asked this the other day about, like, you know, who Arsenal should buy in January, and I couldn't honestly say. I mean, yeah, there are names you can throw out, but, you know,
rattle off any old names.
Yeah, well, exactly. You can say, yeah, I'd like to see Luis Fabiano coming here, or I'd like to see David Villa coming in, but, you know, honestly, you can't see that those sort of players being signed by Arsenal. So where do you go from there? Do you start looking and say, well, yeah, who can we buy? And you start opening up with names like Luca Toni, and it's like, you know, well, yeah, let's have someone else who's cast off. It's like, you know, let's have another player who's really injury prone. and so, you know, you start thinking, well, God, who can we buy at the moment? And you think, well, yeah, we do have world-class players out there. But all they need to do is be able to play. It's very difficult when you compare yourself to teams like Chelsea, and you see the power and the strength and the speed that they've got up front. And those players aren't common, especially with talent.
Of course, the one thing that Arsenal got in their favour is that they can at least still claim that they're still in the Champions League. So it's acting as a sort of a carrot for anyone who might be thinking of joining. Of course, there's much more to it than
that. This is true, though, but the problem is that we had last year when we bought Arshavin, was the fact that because he'd already played in the UEFA Cup, he couldn't play in the Champions League, so
it wasn't eligible. So
so that was rather unfortunate. I mean, it was probably quite good for him. Getting, like, you know, getting first team football, because he was only playing in the Premiership rather than playing the Premiership and the Champions League, which was quite good because he'd already had a full season coming up to November anyway. And so he'd had a couple of months off, I suppose, didn't he? But that was it. He was basically cream cracker anyway, but. Sure. Yeah, it's interesting because now everyone's saying Arsenal are back in the title race. It's even though they lost to Chelsea, you know, they're only a matter of a couple of points behind where they were 3 or 4 weeks ago.
Yes, they're currently 6 points behind Chelsea with a game in hand, so they're definitely kind of back in the hunt.
Yeah.
It's just that consistency, I guess, is the key thing.
It is. I mean, as well, Arsenal have got a very, very tough period coming up at the end of January, which is absolutely devastating. They've got to go away to... to get it straight, I think they've got to go away to Aston Villa.
Home to Aston Villa. Home to Aston Villa at the end of December. At the end of January, though.
Away to Aston Villa.
So, yes, you're quite right.
Home to Manchester United, away to Chelsea, and at home to Liverpool. I think that's in the space of 10 days.
Well, if they can get through that alive, then I suspect.
I think you know, if they get out of that, if they can get out of those four games with 6 points.
Yeah.
Then they're very, very well placed. But of course, there are games either side of that. There's a long run up before then, and there's a long run in after that. So, but you know, I'm not saying that Arsenal are going to finish are going to finish top. But at the moment, I think their best price is 6-1 to win the title, which gives them odds of 3-2 on each way to finish top two. I don't think that's a bad bet. If you're a gambling man, then that's not a bad bet. But
absolutely, yeah. Well, I mean, they'll have taken some heart, I guess, from having beaten one of the other big four teams, having lost already to Chelsea and Man United.
Yeah,
so that's
against Chelsea, we were absolutely hammered, and the same could be said about the Man City game, absolutely hammered again. Man United, that was an unlucky result. Very similar, actually, I think, to the result that we got against Liverpool yesterday, was Man United's result against us. Where you know that was an own goal that kicked that off, and also there was the Giggs goal as well. So, I thought in the game against Man United that we outplayed them, to be honest.
Yeah.
And you know I've not been convinced about Man United now with this injury crisis, and their defeat at the weekend. It's interesting. They're playing Wolves at home tomorrow. Be interesting to see I think it's tomorrow or Wednesday. It'd be interesting to see what sort of approach they take to that game. Because in the past,
yes,
you would have thought that's it. Someone like Wolves comes along after a result like that, and they're really gonna have it.
Yes.
But I don't see it. I'm not sure it's going to happen, because Wolves had a good win, didn't they? At Tottenham.
Tottenham.
Yeah.
Yep. 1-0 at Tottenham.
Yeah. And you sort of think, are Wolves going to go to Old Trafford and have a go at it?
Well, that's two wins on the trot now for Wolves, so they're out of the bottom three. Mm. So yeah, they may be getting a head of steam going there.
Yeah. Well, what do you think? Do you think they're going to go there and have a go at it?
I think they will, but if they go sort of full tilt, then I think they'll come unstuck pretty quickly, to be honest. Because if there's one thing that Man U are good at, it's actually sort of exposing the weaknesses in teams
I don't think they'll go full at it, but I do think they'll go out to try and win set pieces in dangerous areas and test out the defence. Because they are looking defensively very weak, Man United, and so like the midfield has to be as strong as ever, and they're showing it by putting eight midfielders out. I think they were playing eight midfielders. I think they started
the old 1-8-1 formation.
It was basically that. it's interesting times ahead. I think for them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Going back to the Arsenal Liverpool match at the weekend, I mean, it's said that Liverpool, you kind of alluded to this indirectly, but it's sort of said that Liverpool really slackened off towards the end, especially in some of their sort of key players like Gerrard and Torres and so on. They started off quite zippy and then sort of just lost their kind of buzz the longer they went on. They're sort of looking a bit sort of tired, perhaps.
I think there is that about the fact that they played the first half at 100 miles an hour. And you can't do that, and especially when they went down within a quarter of an hour of the restart, and they've only won three games in the last 15. I think that's a stat now, and you've got to think, well, you know, here we go again. It's going to affect any player, even if you're like one of the best players in the world, like Torres. It's like, you know, it is going to affect you. And I think Torres didn't really have that good a game yesterday, or for the whole 90 minutes. There was that moment when he was through on goal, and you thought, that's it, got to stick on goal.
That's it, yep.
Yeah, and he didn't score it. So, yeah, I mean, maybe he wasn't at 100%. I mean, Gerrard looked like Gerrard in the first half and was unlucky not to get a penalty. But I suppose, you know, that's what you get, isn't it, really?
Certainly, yeah.
That's what you get when you go down, you know, like a sack of spuds last week. And, of course, that's something else that happened this week that I think, although it's been mentioned in the press, it was completely glossed over on Match of the Day, was Rooney's dive.
Was what? Sorry, I didn't quite catch that, sorry.
Wayne Rooney's dive in the Man U game.
Oh, yes, of course, yes, absolutely. Yeah, I thought they glossed over that as well. It was sort of all a bit sort of they could have made a bit more of that actually. If it had been another player, they possibly would have done.
If it had been a dirty foreigner, maybe they would have done. Very interesting. But let's gloss over that and talk about better things.
Like everyone else.
Yes.
That defeat for Liverpool leaves them 13 points behind Chelsea at the moment. They're down now in seventh place.
And ironically, 13 points above Portsmouth, isn't it?
Let's have a quick look. God, you're getting me doing mental arithmetic now in the middle. You're quite right. Yes, yeah, absolutely. 13 points above Portsmouth,
and with an identical record as Birmingham.
Well, I was just going to say they have to suffer the shame and ignominy of being on the same number of points as Birmingham. Yes, who are coming up on the rails now with four straight wins, and they're up to eighth now. They're definitely a form team at the moment. I didn't think I'd ever hear myself saying that, but Birmingham doing very well. So Liverpool, just I think that's got to be it now for Liverpool. I mean, not that I think anybody's ever kidding themselves at this stage that they might still be in with a chance of winning the title, but it's just to be so far behind pretty much as we come up to the sort of halfway point in the season is just incredible, especially compared to last year, or last season, I should say.
Yeah, they've got nothing. They've got no distractions now. They've got no European football to sort of save their best players for. They've only got one thing to aim at, and that's fourth spot. Trouble is, there are lots of teams going for it, and there are lots of teams looking really useful for it. When Arsenal have just held on to fourth over the last few, three of the last four seasons, it's only really been one team that's been pressuring them, like whether it be Tottenham or last season Aston Villa. So it was only one team to claw back on.
Yeah.
For Liverpool, they've got to wait for Aston Villa to slip up, but they've also got to wait for Man City and Tottenham to slip up as well.
Yes.
That's what makes the chase down more difficult. I mean, Arsenal and Liverpool have both known this. When for any aspirations they've had of the title, is one team can slip up when going for the title. If you're in a straight run with Man United, they can slip up sometimes.
You know that's the year.
But when you're chasing two teams like that, the likelihood of them both slipping up,
minimal.
Yeah, and it just takes so much away from it, and you really just have to have a lot of luck. And I think that's a lot of the thing about football at the moment is you have to rely on things, on pieces of fortune that come your way.
Quite so, absolutely. Well said, that man. Well, the other key fixture at the top the weekend was the match between Chelsea and Everton. That finished 3-3. We mentioned all the draws before, and that was one of them. And Drogba got two of the Chelsea goals, and one of them was particularly unlucky for Chelsea in that it sort of ended up hitting the post and coming off the back of Petr Cech and going in again. But Yakuba got on the score sheet once again. But I think a few people starting to sort of wag their fingers at Chelsea and sort of say, that's now four games without a win and they haven't won yet in December. So, but I personally, I don't know what you think about this sort of ground, but I think that given overall the good form that Chelsea are on, I think a lot of people making perhaps too much of this slight dip in their form.
Yeah, it is a dip. But I mean, I always think that as long as the team's scoring, then that's not really much of a problem. I mean, like the goals that they let in, were comedic. There wasn't a decent one. There wasn't a decent one in the lot of them, really.
Well, they were all from set pieces.
They were all set pieces, but it was all a sign of disarray at the back. It was all like the centre halves not knowing what the goalkeeper was going to do, or the goalkeeper not knowing what the centre halves were going to do. And that's the sort of thing where you think, no, that's real problems. Because for the next few weeks, all they're going to get is lofted balls into the penalty area, and into the danger zone. And that's what they're going to. If I don't know who they've got next week, but if you're playing someone like Stoke, you're going to put big balls in there to for someone like James Beattie to sort of get in there and mix it up a bit.
Yeah, yeah. They're at home to Portsmouth on Wednesday night. I'm led to believe so. You just know they're going to try that, though. Portsmouth, they're just going to wind up if it had been Stoke, you could get Rory Delap on
I think even then, I mean, like even with Portsmouth, I mean, I think they're going to throw perhaps a couple of the bigger men up front. They might put Kanu on. And just put him in and like let him mix it up a bit.
Target men.
Yeah. And just make just keep peppering the ball with Harvard, because if they're thinking that there is going to be some problem between Cech and Terry and Carvalho, I mean that was it. They weren't a weak defence, and then they were looking really strong. I mean, like, you know that. But no, you do those three goals. I mean, yeah, there were rebounds and things. They were pinging all around. I mean, like that one where was it Drogba headed it on the back of Sahar's back, wasn't it, for the third goal?
I
don't know. What did you think of it?
I think they were playing well enough. I think you're quite right. I think Chelsea are certainly finding it very easy to score goals, and that will serve them well probably for the rest of the season. And they're playing some good football, but there's no doubt about it that from set pieces, I think two of those goals are free kicks of Everton's that we get, and the other one was from a throw on, and they just switch off.
Yeah.
And I mean, the only thing I'm sort of starting to worry about is sort of taking a broader view. This is maybe what impact this is having on maybe the England team in the future. I mean, I know there isn't anything important until the World Cup now, but if you think about it, you've got Ashley Cole, John Terry from Chelsea, you've got Matthew Upson in the defence sometimes from West Ham. We all know how badly West Ham are doing, and you start thinking, good grief, like, you know, what shape are the defence going to be by the time England start playing the World Cup? But
I think it's right, because I think it's one of the weakest areas that we've got. I think you know, we're well sorted for midfielders. You know, we've got an embarrassment of riches there, I think. But when you look at the defence, you know, I think you can pick a back four when they're fully fit. But as soon as you start missing pieces out of that, then you think, oh, blimey, what's going off here? It's like you know, Johnson at right back was taken off yesterday because he was pretty ropey, and like this is going to be, you know, our right back for the next few years. And you know, the most consistent one there looks like Ashley Cole at the moment.
Yeah, I think he's overall playing pretty well, isn't he, at the moment? Yeah,
but then again, who's the cover for him?
That's the key question, isn't it, in a lot of cases? Yeah.
Yeah.
Who is the cover? I think Ancelotti has been sort of coming out and sort of saying, well, you know, don't start accusing us of being pretty poor at the moment, and the manner perhaps in which we're letting in goals, because but I think quite rightly he's actually saying that this season in the Premier League things are a bit different in that there's lots of goals going in left, right and centre against all teams, and so maybe it's not just Chelsea that are letting goals in, it's probably everybody at the moment. So you may have a point there with that. Also Petr Cech has come out, as he does from time to time, bless him, on his soapbox, and basically has sort of said, well, you know, we're not that bad because we've kept a lot of clean sheets, and we've beaten teams like Liverpool, Man U and Spurs when they were, you know, up at the top end of the table in good form as well. So that's kind of what I mean, really. I don't think it's a crisis.
I think it's going to be interesting to see Chelsea, like, you know, I think they're going to, they may start to struggle against the more physical teams, and they might start finding it more difficult against teams in the lower half of the table. The teams that do like to mix it up, like, you know, sort of like the Boltons, like you know, you can just imagine someone like Kevin Davis playing against them on Saturday.
Yeah, kicking lumps out of them.
Yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah, actually, like you know, using that sort of like slight sort of like mistrust between the goalkeepers and centre halves, and really, like, you know, using that to his advantage.
Absolutely.
I mean, I think that's.
We'll see how well they kind of deal with that, I guess.
Yeah, it's interesting. Because that's where teams like Chelsea usually pick up all their points, is by going against these teams, even like the physically strong teams, and out-muscling them and out-playing them on the floor. And when these teams start saying, right, okay, well, look, we're going to start trying to out-muscle you, and then, you know, let's see how well you do about it. And, you know.
That's when you see the kind of the range of you know, how they deal with these things, I suppose.
Exactly.
So that's Everton, actually the first team to take a point at Chelsea this season, which is quite an achievement. And Chelsea hadn't conceded a goal at home in their previous seven games, so even though you might say it's only a draw, it's actually quite an achievement for Everton. So well done indeed to them. And in terms of how the table's looking, as we mentioned, I think, before, maybe we didn't actually, Chelsea are 3 points clear as things stand of Manchester United. And Everton still lumbering down there in 15th position. They're sort of struggling to sort of pull clear. I mean, they're only sort of 3 points off West Ham, who are the sort of highest of the teams in the relegation zone. So
I think a lot of teams down there are struggling to get out of there, though, because I mean, like, it takes something like four wins in a row, like Birmingham have achieved, to actually to actually really change things. It's still all very tight down there, and I think it comes to think when you think like what a bad start the Portsmouth seem to have had, but you know they're not being cast adrift at the bottom there.
No, not at all. No, only 2 points away from Bolton and so on. Yeah. So absolutely, all very tight in the Premier League. Well, that's pretty much it for part one. Coming up in part two, we're going to take a glance into the future to survey the Europa League matches coming up in the course of this week. So join us for that. Welcome to part two of the Sound of Football podcast for this week. We're just going to take a look at the Europa League matches coming up towards the end of this week, or sort of middle of this week. I think it's the final round of Europa League games before we enter the... Is it knockout stages? I get so confused. They keep changing the format of these things.
It's the last 32.
Yes. Last 32. Thanks for that, Graham. And just like I say, it's just like they keep expanding these things and rearranging these things. But anyway, yes, the last round of group games this week. And of particular interest, we'll start off with the matches involving the sort of English and Scottish teams. A crucial one for Fulham. They're away to Basel. I think you covered this one in the TV preview, didn't you, today? On Some People on the Pitch. And Fulham have got to win this one to go through, haven't they, Graham?
Excuse me, sorry.
Slowly dying in the corner.
Yeah, sorry about that. Let's take that again.
Sorry.
Take two.
Take that. Right.
It's all quite close there in Group E, because Roma are playing Sofia. They're top in that group with 10 points. Basel are on 9 and Fulham are on 8. But unfortunately, because Fulham are playing Basel, they do have to win to stand any chance of getting into the top two. Basel, they've won all 5 of their home games in this Europa League campaign, and Fulham have only won once so far on their travels. Basel have completely 100% at home, including a win against Roma. I can't see them losing against Fulham, actually. I think Andy Johnson.
They've already played Basel, haven't they, once already, and actually won 1-0 at home. But I guess, you said, the key thing is that they're going to be playing away, and whether they can sort of deal with that well enough.
I'm not sure if Hodgson is that fussed about it, really. I don't think he's going to go like hell for leather, throw everyone on. There is talk about Andy Johnson being back for the game. So maybe he wants to give him a run out in this, but. I don't hold out too much hope for Fulham. But if they do, then fantastic. But they do need the win to get through.
Well, there was talk before the season started about the whole Europa League thing, and many people basically saying that it's almost like a poison chalice, isn't it? The sheer number of games that you've got to play if you're going to win the damn thing, and the impact that it has on your season, and you're having to weigh up whether you want to concentrate on the league, the Premier League, that is, or Europa League. And it is a critical game. This is a sort of once in a lifetime chance, so to speak. Well, not in a lifetime, but certainly once in a season chance to sort of progress into the knockout stages of the Europa League. Mm. So you'd think if they start badly, you might then sort of think, oh well, to hell with it, forget it, and let it slip. And it's in some ways it's no loss that you can then it's certainly a sort of key game in the group, and as you mentioned, I think Roma are already through, so we shall be keeping our eye on that one. Elsewhere, we've got I think you every week these days we be talking about dead rubbers of one sort or another, and there's a joke there, but I'm not going to go try and sum it up at this stage. But Celtic are in playing Rapid Vienna away, and they're already out.
Yeah.
So there's no need to kind of dwell on that. But Everton in a converse sort of way, are already through. They're playing now. I don't know how you pronounce it. I've heard people pronounce it Beta Borisov, or maybe just B-A-T-E Borisov.
Well, sure it's all in caps, so I say B-A-T-E. So
fair enough, too. Yeah. So I mean, they're sort of playing. I'm not even sure. Are they from Bulgaria, Borisov? I'm a bit out of touch with these things, but at least
they're Belarusian.
Belarusian?
Yes.
Oh, there we go. Good knowledge there. But yeah, I mean, we're certain of having at least one English team through to the next round because of Everton. They're currently second in the group, 3 points behind Benfica, but they're 5 points ahead of the chasing pack, which includes.
Yeah, because of the results against Benfica, they can't actually finish top of the group, so they're going to finish second, whatever. I don't know what that means. Whether that means they'll probably get a seeded. They might get a seeded team in the second round.
Knowing the way these things work,
or one of the Champions League dropouts, maybe they'll get one of those. I don't know how it works. I think that's probably the case, because there'll be 12 first place teams coming through there. So I presume that they will somehow avoid, or not. You know, who knows what UEFA do? They'll probably just mix it up and think, well, you know, we'll pick the teams that we want to go through, and then we'll drop the teams we don't want to go through.
Quite smoke and mirrors time.
Smoke and mirrors time, indeed.
A curious one in Group G is Lazio playing Levski Sofia. Mm. Sort of mentioned this because of your area of expertise with the old Italian football, and that's Lazio have kind of got to win this one. I mean, Levski Sofia haven't won any of their games thus far, haven't won any of their five games. They're out.
A goal. But,
indeed, but if Lazio win by a sizeable amount, let's say two or three, and Villarreal lose to Salzburg and Red Bull Salzburg, who are actually leading the group quite considerably. They've won all five of their games so far.
Yeah.
Then there is a chance that Lazio can go through. I mean, you'd have to go with Lazio to win their one, but it's just whether the other game falls in their favour.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I
suppose Salzburg might take their foot off the gas, given that they're already through.
Yeah, I don't think Lazio can go through, because I think it's done on the results between the sides, and I think
head to head.
Yeah, right. And I think Villarreal, I think had a big win at home against Lazio, and Lazio only just sneaked a win at home. Yeah, I think I've just checked that out. Yeah, and Villarreal descended where they won 4-1. Lazio only won 2-1. So I think for Lazio, the journey is over. So more dead rubbers, I think. If that's worked out, but I think that probably is.
You always know more about these things than I do, Graham, and that's why we have you on the show, frankly.
I'm the one who tedious.
If you get if no, who reads no one all else those understands tedious the mechanics rules. Of UEFA's Yeah. It's you.
The team, the actual group. There are a couple of really interesting groups in there. As interesting as the Europa League does get, I think, because there's a straight head-to-head between Sparta Prague and FC Copenhagen in Group K. Now Copenhagen won the home one 1-0. They're both level on points, so FCK only need the draw, but. Sparta need the win to go through. Group H is quite interesting as well, because you've got Steve McLaren's FC 20. They've got their away to Steaua Bucharest, while the Moldovan team Sheriff are playing Fenerbahce. Now Fenerbahce are already through, so if Sheriff win that, then they leapfrog 20, and it's up to 20 to go out and actually beat Steaua Bucharest.
Steaua Bucharest.
That's quite an interesting one. So there are some interesting games around. It's not all sewn up, but it's interesting how this ruling, because we found this last week in the Champions League whereby you know what could have been quite interesting if it was based on goal difference. Has all of a sudden been turned on its head, because it's on the games played, so it's like it's already decided. You can't just go and win. You know, you can't go and run up a score against another team.
Overturn the deficits.
But I suppose if you're lucky enough to face a team that is, you know, got nothing to play for in the last game, then I suppose
it works in
Yeah, it works like that. Yeah. So, you know, it swings and roundabouts, I suppose. But Group B is quite interesting, actually, because you've got...
I was just going to mention that, yes. Yeah. As someone who's been following French football on some people on the pitch this year, I'm really intrigued by Lille's position, currently second in the group, tied on points with Genoa.
Yeah, even though they've lost their last two games, and it's all quite tight there now, isn't it? So...
Yeah, I mean, Valencia are leading the group on 9 points ahead of Lille and Genoa, say, each on 7. But the curious thing for me is that Lille have been absolutely shockingly bad in by their own standards in Ligue 1 this season. But just recently have got a few results together, and they're now up to third, which basically shows you how close things are in Ligue 1. Yeah. It's so close, and they're now suddenly up to third out of nowhere, and yet... As you just said, in the actual Europa League group they're in, Group B, they've lost their last two games. So they're actually hitting form coming into their last game. Mm. So I'm going to be kind of keeping an eye on that. They're playing Slavia Prague.
Yeah, they've got a really good... They've probably got the best chance of getting out of that group, actually, because they've got... Are they at home to Slavia? Or are they away?
They are, yes.
Yeah,
they're at
home,
yeah.
So that bodes well, because Slavia haven't got a win yet in the group out of their five games.
Indeed.
And Genoa and Valencia playing each other. Now
and they've both got a win, really.
They do. And so Valencia are in this position where they're like, you know, 2 points are clear going into the game. They could still finish up not going. So I think that's I think Genoa Valencia is actually the pick of the games, I think, out of the Europa League this week. So
yeah,
if you definitely, so there's our tip. If you watch one Europa League match this week, watch Genoa
Valencia.
That one.
Superb stuff. All right, well, that's pretty much our preview of the Europa League matches done and dusted, and with it, I think we pretty much find ourselves heading towards the end of this week's podcast. A few other things that we just need to do in the any other business section. First of all, just want to say thanks to everyone that turned up last week to our Socrates London Football Bloggers meetup. It was a great night.
So
Terry, myself and Graham were there and had a great time meeting everyone, people that were there for the first time, because we've had one of these before, in case you don't know. And some people that were at the first one, some people that weren't, but it was great seeing everyone again. And our thanks to everyone at Football Threes for providing the venue and everything else. And
giving us the opportunity to play Football Threes, which was thoroughly entertaining.
Which you and I proved to be abysmal.
Yes, we did.
We won't dwell on that too much. Less said about that, the better. But it's a great game, Football 3. Go check it out. Football3s.com is the simple way of describing the URL there. If you are a blogger in the London area, somewhere near London, and you think, oh, I've missed out on that, don't worry. We're trying to organise another one in the new year. So keep checking back on the Sound of Football or on the Socrates blog site. If you just type in Socrates meetup,
Or
something into Google, you'll probably find it very easily from that. So don't worry about that. There'll be hopefully another one in the new year. And just to say that we're all three of us will be appearing on another podcast this week, just because we can't get enough of the damn stuff. We're going to be appearing on the Two Footed Tackle podcast this week with Gary Andrews and Chris Nee. So go check that out. I think they'll probably be putting their podcast on iTunes sort of Tuesday, Wednesday sort of time. So look around for that. It'll be great to all three of us appearing on the program, because we've all appeared individually in the past. Just to say that next week's show is our last before Christmas, so it's going to be our Christmas special. I say that sort of with a knowing sort of inflection in my voice, because we haven't actually got anything specifically planned to make it special, but hopefully before then we'll think of something, and I don't know quite what that will be, but there we are. So hopefully we will have the pleasure of your company next week for another Sound of Football podcast. But for now, just want to very quickly say, you know where to find us. Go to iTunes, subscribe to the podcast, leave us a comment if you like, or visit the Sound of Football blog site. You know, we've said all this stuff before. If you've only just sort of joined in, then, you know, where were you, frankly? Anyway, that's it for now. Thank you very much indeed for listening. Thanks, Graham, for joining me this week.
Yep.
And hopefully we'll have Terry back again next week. For now, though, it's goodbye from both of us.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Look out for the Onion Bag Christmas podcast, football disaster movie, coming into your iTunes feed later this week. I think I'll...